Welcome to our podcast, By Our Calling, as we talk to those that serve the homeless and do what we do, help people walk with Jesus and get off the streets every day. Today, we're talking about leadership coaching. We're going to talk about why it's important to invest in the leader, in the ministry, and on the ministry, and kind of some principles of business world and how we can apply those in leading a ministry.
Who is our calling? What does our calling do to help the homeless?
The nonprofit.
We care with dignity.
Our calling.
Can't help but think about the definition of Christian.
We connect with intentionality.
Called our calling.
To our calling.
We build community with integrity.
Our calling.
This is our calling and our podcast, A Word on the Streets about homelessness. Today, I'm talking to a friend of mine, Nick Kennedy. Nick is an executive coach. He does a lot of coaching. He is an entrepreneur, serial entrepreneur. He started lots of things. He will tell us a little bit about that. Nick, kind of give us a little bit of your history.
Yeah, Wayne, thanks for having me on. I love our calling and I love you. And I'm really thankful to be here today. I am a serial entrepreneur, mainly because I make a really bad employee. So I figured I just might as well start my own things.
There you go.
And some in healthcare and then some in aviation. And I sold a business and I had thought I was on top of the world. And my wife at the time, we'd been married 18 years now, 27 years. So it's now been 9 years since then. Just as my New York Times article was coming out and I thought I was everything, she said, I love you, but I don't like you. And I later found out I was living that quote that C.S. Lewis says, which is, you know, man feels like he's finding his way in the world when really the world is finding its way in man. And so I grew up in the church. And my story, the thing that really changed my life a whole lot is my dad went to prison when I was 16 years old. So I grew up upper middle class. My dad went to prison for nearly 20 years. And I had a chip on my shoulder. And entrepreneurship became my identity that allowed me to say, hey, I'm worthy. And I got that from the world. And luckily, when I sold the business, I was able to take some time off. And I did a lot of work through John Townsend and other folks. And I was able to reconstruct my identity in Christ. And now I get to walk with other entrepreneurs and other leaders and sit with them in these sacred moments and help them do one thing really well, which is take opaqueness and make it clear. That's really what I do. I'm a professional listener for what's being said and what's not being said. And then I help bring clarity so that they can intentionally make decisions on behalf of themselves and their organization. How's that for an intro?
That's awesome. I know how much you hate talking about yourself. Right. You did a great job, though.
Thank you.
You know, the reason why I thought it was so important to talk to you and have record this time with you is because this is specifically for people that are serving the homeless community. Mm-hmm. They're running shelters. They're running a ministry. They've got a group of friends going out every Friday serving meals under a bridge. They're running an organization.
Yeah.
And sometimes we're so busy doing the thing, right? Working in the organization, yeah. We don't ever work on the organization, right? Yeah. We work in the ministry, not on the ministry. And what you do is so instrumental in helping people lead, right? And leadership skills are vacant in a lot of organizations. You used a word there. First, I want to start off with you kind of defining it for us. What is an entrepreneur?
So I wrote a book a couple of years ago called The Good Entrepreneur. And through my research of writing that book, entrepreneur is a French word. And it means anybody who bears risk. So we've long thought in the United States as an entrepreneur is someone who does startups. And that clearly is the answer. But the French word, the pure definition is anybody who bears risk. So it's not just a startup founder or CEO who starts a technology business like we usually think about. It's anybody who's saying, I'm going to put myself at risk to make the world a better place. And so in this book, I argue that the entrepreneurs are so much more than tech CEOs. It's ministers are entrepreneurs. Stay-at-home parents are entrepreneurs. Dentists are entrepreneurs. House builders are entrepreneurs. Like anybody who's saying, I'm going to go take a risk to make myself better and make the world better, that's what an entrepreneur is.
I love that. Often we think about it's just a business guy, right? And in the world of ministry, I hear this all the time. You can't bring corporate into ministry, right? And I'm a Peter Drucker fan. You know, I read a lot of business books. I've read a bunch of books you've recommended. I've read your book. It's in ministry, we need to think about these principles and leadership and principles about strategy and KPIs and stuff. But, for years, I just kept getting a lot of pushback of you're being too corporate. Yeah. But when I read the Gospels, especially like when Jesus sends out the 70, I love that story. He sends out the 70 and he says, I'm going to send these guys to a list of cities that I'm about to go minister to. So somewhere Jesus has got his little paper iPad. Yeah. He's got a list of cities he's going to go to. He sends these guys out ahead of him to the cities he's about to minister, not any random cities, but specifically the ones he's about to go minister to. And he gives them, a strategy. Go out two by two, carry this, don't carry this, say this, don't say that, don't do this. If they do this, respond this way. If they say don't, kick the dust off your feet and keep going. There's a lot of strategy. And then as I go back and read the Old Testament, there's tons of strategy there. And leadership principles. Yeah. We could write a book on Nehemiah's leadership. Business acumen and leadership skills and what you focus on being a good entrepreneur, how is that relevant to working in a ministry?
Well, I would say two things. Number one, all truth is God's truth. And I feel like our role as believers in this world, in this broken, fallen world, we know we're never going to completely redeem this world as we see it today, but part of our world is to work towards that. And the way we work towards that is to find truth and then excavate that as much as we can. Like when someone gives you a moment of truth, that string, your job is to pull as hard as you possibly can. And so whether it's Drucker or it's Paul, truth is truth is truth. It's all God's. He's the creator. He designed everything. Truth is his. So I take the opinion that let's go find the best truth, recognizing that regardless of who wrote it, it's God's truth. They may not have intended it to be God's truth, but it is God's truth. The second thing I have to say is, again, to quote C.S. Lewis, he says in one of his books, he says, what the world needs is not more Christians who happen to be writers. What the world needs is great writers, the best writers, who when someone says, why are you such a great writer? The answer is because my God, my creator, has called me to be the best I can. Like I don't, when I need my toilet unclogged, I don't look for the igthus on a business card because quite frankly, I want the best plumber, Christian or not.
Yeah.
And I think as Christians, it is really easy to kind of fall back on, well, I'm a Christian, therefore I can just kind of get away with it. What I'm saying, well, you do it here with our calling, right? Not like you look at the work that you're doing here, I love you, Wayne, for a lot of reasons. One of which is just your ability to see things differently. You're very contrarian in the best possible way. You go, this is the way it's always been done, but we're not seeing the change we want. Therefore, why don't we do it another way? And I think that's what God calls us to do, is to go, hey, I'm calling you to find a better way to redeem this world, to redeem yourself, to redeem others, to follow this path as best you can. And so I think one of the best and worst things that ever happened to the evangelical church, modern church, is when Bill Hybels got a cover, a copy of Good to Great. And he said, well, this works for corporations. Let's do it at Willow Creek, right? His church. Mm-hmm. And guess what? The church grew and grew and grew and grew. And you can argue all day long about mega churches and the size and that kind of stuff. But like at the end of the day, it grew. But that was principles he used because he was a business leader who decided to get into church ministry. What's interesting, though, is that the two number one positions in the United States for narcissists are CEOs and pastors. And anymore in a megachurch, it's really hard to tell. It's really hard to have a pastor who wouldn't have been a great CEO or a great CEO who wouldn't be a pastor. And that's both good and bad because we get caught up in numbers and not in soul transformation, right? Mm-hmm. Real discipleship around it. So all that to say is when you go do something, be the best at it. Like, I want to be the best business coach that ever walked on the face of the earth. My simple goal is when I die, they say he was the best ever. Will I get there? I don't know, but like, that's my goal. Mm-hmm. And so how do I do that? I look to scripture, I look to Christians, but I look to a lot of secular writing as well to go. I look to a lot of Stoics, I look at philosophers, I look across the board. and go, how can I make myself better so that I can be prepared in the moment when someone says, hey, here's this question I need your help on. Does that make sense?
Man, you just said something there. You said, I want to figure out how to make myself better. So many people are busy doing the work that they never stop to pause and figure out, how can I get better at doing the work?
Yeah.
How can I, I'm a carpenter, right? How can I hone my skills, right? To make better wood projects, right? I'm a plumber. Yeah. How can I hone my skills, buy better equipment, you know, to be able to unclog that toilet faster? In leaders of ministries, it's, we often don't think about, we're so busy, right? We get tons of people, like here, we're feeding people, trying to get people showers and laundry and get them off the streets. We've got heroin addicts, meth addicts, you know, we've got people having all kinds of major crisis. We never stop and pause about how can we become better at our job? How can we learn better leadership practices?
Yeah.
And yet there's so much correlation between, we have a board, just like a business. We have a budget, just like a business. You know, we have donors. We have guests that we serve, right? And we don't call them clients, but that's what a business would, right? Customers, right? We have these different groups of people that we're trying to serve and be accountable to. There's so much similarity. I feel like your principles in your book, The Good Entrepreneur, are very relevant to people in ministry. Are there a couple of principles in that book that you think of specifically that, man, that that's kind of a, would really apply to someone in ministry?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the principles is good entrepreneurs ask for help. I, for the longest time, again, right, being an Angel Tree kid, picked myself up by my bootstraps, rubbed some dirt on it.
Now, wait a minute. You said something there. Angel Tree kid. So when someone goes to the Angel Tree at Christmas and buys toys that they can give a child of a prisoner, you are one of those kids.
Chuck Colson's ministry, right?
Yeah.
And honestly, like, I was thankful for them, but I hated it because it was a reminder on Christmas morning that my dad was in prison and I have a big butt and they always got me jeans and they never fit me. So it was like a double whammy, right? You didn't want to ask for Husky jeans, but you needed Husky jeans. But yeah, I was an Angel Tree kid. And when you're an Angel Tree kid, what you're taught is you can't trust anybody, and except for yourself. In fact, today, 27 years of marriage, right, this summer coming up, and I still, my issue is, I have to remind myself that my wife is for me, not against me. When I'm not healthy, when I'm not well integrated, when I'm not balanced, I tend to go into, I'm strong enough by myself, and I don't need other people. And that's just a lie from the pit of hell. Human beings are one of the few animals born that are completely helpless for like a year. Almost every other animal pops out and they're walking around, they can eat, they can do all the things they can do almost immediately. Humans for a year are dependent upon somebody else. I do not think, God could have made us pop out and start walking and talking and typing and all those kind of things. He could have made it that way. I think he's just saying like, hey, listen, this is part of the process. Be a baby. Let other people take care of you. And when you become an adult, take care of others, but also continue to let other people take care of you. So I think asking for help is a huge principle. The other principle is leave a legacy. If you're lucky, you're going to get 30,000 days on this earth. At your funeral, less than 10 of those days will be spoken about. So there's 29,990 days you're going to live that almost nobody will ever have a record of. What are those 10 days? Oh, here's the scary part. The 10 days that you that we've spoken about, the majority of them, aside from your marriage and maybe your kids being born, the majority of them, you'll wake up that morning and not know it's one of those days. So how do you prepare for that to ensure that your legacy is one that you can be proud of and God's called you to? And so I think as a principal, when you think about, you know, the reason I do the work I do now is because we spend more awake time at work or ministries than we do anywhere else in our lives. And I believe you can turn the hearts of CEOs towards God and towards their employees and towards their communities and towards their investors and towards their vendors and towards all the stakeholders in their business. You can change the world. So I work with billionaires. And I work with professional athletes and I work with people and I go, hey, listen, you have a ton of influence. Look at all these employees you have. What if instead of them being worried about if they're going to keep their job, you made it very clear to them what the terms were and what you were going to give to them. A great example of this is a guy named Kurt Richardson. He's the founder of Otterbox. self-made billionaire in Fort Collins, never graduated college. At the end of the first year of working at Otterbox, they give you a life planning session, a two-day strategy session where they plan out the next 20 years of your life for free. And guess what? If that comes out and says, hey, you're not designed to work at Otterbox, they let you go with free will to go do what God's called you to go do. It's not a Christian business per se. Now they say, I think their purpose is something like, we exist to give, and they're very generous. The Richardsons are very generous families. But like you look at that and go, this guy, you know, he's got $1 billion and he gives and gives and gives, right? And he provides back into his employees. So I think some of the principles are, everything is a principle. If you can decide what your principles are that you want to live to, you're pre-making decisions for yourself so that there is no confusion when it comes time to make that decision. And if you can look to Wayne Walker 10 years from now and go, what would most benefit Wayne 10 years from now? It makes the decision today pretty easy because you go, oh, yeah, it's a little bit hard now, but I think 10 years from now it's going to make sense. Just like you did when you said, I'm going to go plant this location in Dallas, because I think 10, 20, 30 years from now it's going to be a lot better.
Man, you said something to me that's very convicting. You said a couple of things. I won't talk about the personal stuff because, you know, that's too convicting, but you know, sometimes secular businesses from a leadership perspective are so much better to their employees than Christian ministries are.
Yeah.
And I think it's because they don't learn in business leadership how to be good to people, how to care for people. Not only that you need other people in your life, but you need to care for other people and invest back in them.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a principle that you need as a leader, you need to be selfish first. You cannot pour water into someone else's cup if your pitcher is empty.
Oh, but see, but in a Christian world, we're not ever supposed to be selfish. I mean, that's a sin, right?
I mean, look, you can try to pour water out of an empty pitcher, but guess what's going to be there?
Well, when Jesus said, love your neighbor, you know, one of my sleeves says, as yourself,
yeah,
right? Some, we don't take care of ourselves.
Yeah.
And if we actually cared for our neighbors the way we take care of ourselves, it would be humiliating.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it would be. But you know, it'd be a lot healthier. I do work with church leaders as well. The number one problem with elders and pastors in church is the exact same problem with CEOs, and that is that they do not know where their influence stops, and they try to influence things that they cannot influence. John Townsend, the author with Henry Cloud of Boundaries book, is a mentor of mine and taught me a lot of these things. And I said, how did you come up with the idea of boundaries for the book? It sold millions and millions of copies. He said he and Henry Cloud, years ago, they were running a mental health facility on the West Coast. And as they were looking at the patients that were in the mental health facility, the number one reason they entered a mental health facility was they literally went crazy and needed to be hospitalized, mentally hospitalized, because they were trying to control something they couldn't control. They drove themselves crazy trying to control something they couldn't control. And that's the same thing that pastors do, and that's the same thing that elders do, and it's the same thing that deacons do, and it's the same thing that CEOs do, and the same thing that vice presidents do. It's the same things that fathers do and husbands do across the board, as we try to control things we can't control. And when we finally step back and go, hey, this is my hula hoop. If you think of a literal hula hoop around your waist, 99% of what you can control is in that hula hoop. And the rest that's outside the hoop, you can't control. You can coerce, you can manipulate, you can put sticks out, you can put carrots out, you can do all the things you want to go do, but you can't control other people. And you can literally go crazy trying to.
I see that all the time. Like even in our space, we try to control the outcome of people we serve, right? We pour into an addict and he relapses. Yeah. I mean, I've poured into people that have been murdered. I've poured into people that have committed murder. I've poured into people that have committed suicide. And you feel like if you were a better pastor, they'd turn out better. Yeah. Well, that's from the pit of hell. There's so many things you can't control. Yeah. We can't control donations that come in here. I can't control staff and challenges that they have at home. We can't control the outcomes or even sometimes the outputs of what we do here. Yeah. And that's so similar to, I guess, what makes us crazy on a daily basis.
It is what makes us crazy. But if we sit and we go, what has God uniquely called me to go do? So I did some work with a guy named Pete Richardson, who is, happens to be Kurt Richardson's brother. He runs an institute called the Patterson Institute, where he does these life planning sessions. And I spent 3 days with him, my wife and I did, and out of it came one sentence for my life. And that sentence is, I create experiences that lead to life change and experiences that lead to truth-telling and life change for billionaires and prisoners and everyone in between. So when you call me and say, hey, can you come on my podcast? I look at that sentence and go, do I have an opportunity to create an experience that leads to truth telling and life change? Oh yeah, I know Wayne, he's the real deal. This is gonna be a good one. I'm in, I'm 100% in. I'll fly there, I'll be there, I'll do whatever I need to do to get there. If you called me and said, hey, I want you to come on and talk about how great you are as a business person, and we're gonna just, and it didn't lead to like, I'd be like, I don't know what to tell you. That's flattering. I love the idea of that. That's not what God's called me to do in this season of my life. My decisions are pre-made. I'm the richest man in the world because my decisions about how to spend my time are predetermined. Now, God might call me something different in a different season, but for right now, right here, I'm planted here. And when people call me and go, can I work with you, or would you work with me, or how does this work? I look at that and go, I can't coach anybody who's not willing to be coached. If they say, if that meets that criteria, the answer is hell yes. And if the answer is no, then the answer is hell no. It's not like kind of, maybe, sort of, I need the money, or I really like this person, or they're kind of famous, I'd like to be in their life. No, the answer is hell yes or hell no. I'm the richest person in the world because I know my decisions for the next, as long as God's called me to this place, I know what my decision is going to be. And I think that's applicable, whatever that sentence is for you. Wayne, I know you have a sentence like that, right? Clearly you do. You can see the fruit of your labor, the fruit of your spirit as it's laid out in this physical manifestation of this building, and the people who are downstairs right now, warm on a cold day, getting their clothes washed, getting fed. That's a physical manifestation of a sentence in your life that said, I'm going to go do this. I'm called to go do this.
So these purpose statements that you're talking about, I'm in another leadership group right now and we're coming up with these values, right? What are our personal values? And it took me a couple months to come up with them. Now I have them printed up. They're on the wall right behind my computer screen so I can see them all day. And anytime anything comes my way, I look at those values and say, does it really fit that? And if it doesn't, why am I doing it?
Yeah.
I think as an organization, and you see mission drift all the time in an organization, but what you're talking about is like mission drift in a person. Mm-hmm. Is this really what God's created you to do? And if it isn't, why are you doing it?
Yes, and when that happens and you, I call it river time. My brother-in-law taught me this concept. We like to go float the Blue River and Yampa River up in Colorado, and we fly fish off his raft.
Sounds terrible.
And I said, what do you like about being on the river? He said, I'm on river time. I said, what's that? He goes, you see that corner up there, that bend around the river? And I said, yeah. He goes, I have no idea what's around that corner. And there's almost nothing I can do save stopping and getting out of the river to slow us down. And there's almost nothing I can do to really materially speed us up. But I believe when I come around that corner, I'm going to have the gift and talent as the person guiding this boat for us to be safe. So you get to just sit there and be like, I'm on river time. I'm telling you, I have had times in my life where I've worked 10 times as hard and have had 1/10 of the actual outcome. But when you get into a flow and you go, oh man, and you just slow down enough to go, this is where I'm supposed to be. There's this great video. There's a movie called Margin Call. It's the fictitious fall of, I think, Lehman Brothers in 2008, and it's the last 24 hours. And there's this one scene where Jeremy Irons is the chairman of the board, and he's called in early in the morning. He flies in on his helicopter, and he's trying to decide what to do with this crisis in 2008, right? It's on the cusp of it. What do they go do? And he says, speak to me, to this analyst, speak to me like I'm a little child or a golden retriever. Like just dumb it down for me. And he says what's going on, and he realizes, Jeremy Irons realizes, like, it's up, the gig's up. And he says, do you know why I'm in this position? Why I get paid all this money and have all this power? It's for one reason and one reason alone. It is to listen to the music. And what I hear right now is nothing. The music has stopped. And I love that illustration because the higher you go in the organization, the fewer decisions you have to make, but the bigger impact they all are. And there are three different levels of leadership. One is someone tells you what to do and you do it to the best of your ability and you do it earlier than and better than they ask you to do. The next is you start to tell other people what to do and you start to go through that process. The third, where most people don't ever get to this level, is this self-guiding mind, where you actually go out and you're finding problems today that do not exist yet. You've checked all the boxes, you've put your house in order, you've created your operating system, things are working well enough that you can go, as the CEO and as the founder or as the chairman or as the leader, I need to go find the problem that's gonna start in 3 years, in 10 years, in 20 years, and I need to start to prepare the organization now. You can never get to that place if you're just too busy trying to keep the lights on, because you live a reactive life. You don't live a proactive life. And when you live a reactive life, you're redlining all the time and exhaustion comes in and you start to make mistakes. And pretty soon you just throw your hands and go, I can't believe I ever started, even thought I could possibly do this. And the answer is, to get faster and to get more efficient, you've got to slow down and stay inside your hula hoop and be able to see the world really clearly, right? Tony Gwynn is my favorite baseball player growing up. There was one season, I think he only struck out like 10 times. He just did not miss the ball. And he talks about, man, when he was in the zone, someone would throw a curveball. He saw it coming out of that pitcher's hand. He said the entire stadium went mute. The ball looked like a beach ball. I could see the spin. I knew where it was going to be before. And I had to decide which side of the field did I want to hit it to. Everything slowed down. That's what God offers to us if we're willing to do the work up front. And if not, fastballs are going to come zinging past you all day long, and you're never going to be able to touch them.
So during COVID, all of the shelters in Dallas kind of went on lockdown. And they did that to prevent outbreaks, but all of them had COVID because, you know, it was everywhere. But at the time, none of them would take anybody else in. Mm-hmm. So if you were experiencing homelessness, the shelters wouldn't take anybody in. So, and we never shut down here. So, you know, we're not a shelter. So we had tons of people wrapping around the block, you know, people coming, cars down the street for people eating lunch. And we moved some services outside. But what we had to do was retool. We had to step back and say, look, traditionally, the only options we have is to get someone in a shelter or get someone into some kind of housing. And we had to pause and ask those questions, okay, what's not working here and how do we come up with better options? Now, during that time, like everybody did, you sent some of your staff home during COVID. We had them actually doing research projects and doing intensive research around the country to figure out other options for us. Yeah. And so now we have this software where we have 700 different exit strategies for people. We collect over 100 data points on a person and basically playmatch.com. What's the best long-term recovery program for this guy who's a heroin addict, who has one leg, he served in the Vietnam War, and he has a traumatic brain injury? Yeah. The need for him and the recovery for him is different than a 14-year-old sex trafficking victim, which is different than a mom with four kids, which is different than a guy in his 40s who's struggling with meth. Yeah. And so we've had to retool. And now that we're doing it, I don't want us to rest on our laurels and figure out, okay, what is the next thing that we can kind of get ahead? You know, this last year, I'm going off my memory here and I'm getting older. This last year, in 2023, we helped 1,357 people off the streets by going through this process and now tracking their retention to make sure they're staying off the streets, which tracks the efficacy of all those programs we send them to. Yeah. We may send somebody to another state, another city. You know, if we work with a sex trafficking victim, which we do every single day, you know, the places, the good ones are not close and they're not free. Right? So we're going to pay the money. It's going to be expensive, but we're going to get him or her into the most appropriate place and send them there. And we're trying to come up with new solutions. But sometimes, you know, we bang our head against the wall and there is no solution. Yeah. So as you're working with entrepreneurs and you're coaching them to find solutions, right, to step outside of that space, where do you lead someone who says there's no answer to this problem?
Well, I guess I have two thoughts on that. One is business and or ministry is going to be hard. It's not going to be easy, but it should be simple. The reason I say that is because so often we make business or ministry hard because we've made it complicated. if it's too complicated, it may not be a good business or a good ministry, or we may have overdone it. So the first question we go is go down to basic principles. I don't know if you've seen Elon Musk's engineering principles, right? His first principle is you delete everything you possibly can from, if the process isn't working, delete everything you possibly can. And you look at it and go, okay, well, we might need that. Let's put that back in, right? He's got this whole process he goes through. So you delete everything you don't need. What's the point of the business? What's the point of the ministry? What are you doing that doesn't lead towards that? It's the exact same thing about that principle for your life. What's the calling and the mission statement and the purpose of a ministry? If you're doing something that doesn't lead to that, get rid of it. Just cut it off, move on. Make it simple, not easy, but simple. The second thing I would say is that entrepreneurs, and I would consider people who are starting ministries entrepreneurs, they do one thing really well. They trust that their future self will be capable to solve that problem. They don't know exactly how they're going to get there, but they trust that the future Wayne, the future Nick, the future whomever will be capable in that time to solve that problem. We're supposed to walk in faith. If you knew immediately what was going to happen 10 years from now, what would be the fun in that? And why would we need God? Oh, you would be your own God. I'd be my own God. When I'm in my weaker moments, my favorite sin is pride. And what is that for me? That's questioning if there is a God, because I'm pretty good at what I do. Like confessing to you, like that's my number one favorite sin. And I have to go like, no, there is a God and I'm not him. And then I go, deep breath, there is a God and I'm not him and I'm his child. See, when my identity is a child of God, I know that he's got everything outlined every single day. And I knew before you were born, before I was born, God knew we'd be sitting here before this microphone was invented, having this conversation. And I can go, oh, I don't know how I'm gonna get through this day or next year or 10 years from now, but I believe that God has called me into this path, which is why getting so quiet. We've recently moved to Colorado and I bring my clients. Part of it is because I love Colorado and I love skiing. I love mountain biking. I love hiking. I love fishing. I love all those things. Part of it is I bring my clients from New York, from Dallas and Chicago and Los Angeles up there to this little town of 12,000 people where it just slows down. And there's a rhythm in nature that is which is akin to, I believe, the Spirit of God. I believe we see, the first thing we know about God is he's a creator. The next thing we know is we're made in his image. So we're designed to create. We consume more than we create, and that's the problem. But when we get out of nature and we see the eagle soaring and we see the river flowing and we look at how these mountains have been formed over all these different years and you go, oh man, and like it's the season of change for the leaves and now the snow's coming and why do we have more snow or not enough snow? All these things, it's like there's a rhythm. And God's going like, hey, I'm right here. I'm constantly speaking to you. Your job is to get quiet enough to hear me. I'm not going to get any louder and I'm not going to get any quieter. You got to quiet your life down so you can hear me. And if you can't hear God, it doesn't matter what you do because you might be lucky and follow him, but like just get really quiet, which is why you got to stay in your hula hoop and you got to slow your life down as a leader and you got to have margin to be a thinker. I think writing is a big part of this. I don't know what I think until I write. I might say something off the top of my head, but I can sit down and talk to you for an hour pretty easily to write an essay, to write a 10,000 word essay. It might take me weeks. Why? Because I'm thinking about every word. I'm thinking about every sentence. I'm thinking about every paragraph. I'm thinking about how I want to start it, how I want to end it. What do I want to bring the reader to? Why? Because I'm having to do time travel. I'm saying I'm going to write something now that next week you might read, and I hope it connects with you in a way that I want to connect with you. And I think as leaders, that is our job, is to slow down enough that we can think really well. How now then shall we live, right? Which is what Francis Schaeffer said. Let's get away to the mountains in Switzerland and talk about these things. Let's have deep conversations. Let's be intellectual about it. That I think is what we're called to so that we can make fewer decisions that have a bigger impact.
What you're saying reminds me of the scripture in Psalm 121 where he says, I looked at the hills. Where does my hope come from? Like you're talking about the mountains. And then the next line is, my hope comes from the maker of the hills. Yeah. Not the hills, right?
Yeah.
Out there in the mountains, enjoying it all. I look to the hills. Where does my hope come from? It comes from the maker of heaven and earth, yeah. Right? You talked about the principle of simplifying things.
Yeah.
You know, I think years ago, if someone would have said, what does our calling do? I'd come up with this jumbled mess. And as a board and leadership, you know, for years, we kind of just, you're just loving the homeless people. We're just trying to love people to Jesus. We're trying to, you know, disciple the homeless community. Well, discipleship, it's a pregnant word. You know, no one knows what it means. For us now, it's very simple. We ask two questions. That's it. Every day. Will you trust the Lord? Will you let us help you off the streets? That starts everything. It's kind of like Subway. What kind of bread? What kind of meat? Once we get there, we can make 1,000 different sandwiches, right? Once we start with the questions of, will you trust the Lord? Will you let us help you off the street? It gives us an opportunity to really start to focus and narrow down on what's in our hula hoop and what we do and what we don't do. We have so many partners that serve with us here. In this building, we have about 15 different partner rooms. And so we have agencies that come in, provide mental health care and physical. We have 2 different mental health care providers, I think 3 different medical providers. I mean, we get your pharmaceuticals sent here. We have the VA here, the city of Dallas doing ticket evasions. We have rehabs, we have detoxes, trauma counselors, all these agencies. We don't do that stuff, right? Yeah. They do it. And honestly, they would do it better than we do because that's not our specialty. We want to focus on, from a leadership and business perspective, what are we good at? What's in our hula hoop? Yeah. And how do we really just focus on that? And I don't think we could get to that space until we spend some time alone, just really trying to spend some time with the Lord and saying, Lord, what are you calling us to?
Yes, to get time alone and get quiet. And I would also just say this, there's a humility to inviting other people into this. There's a humility to say, I don't know how to go do this as good as you do, so why don't you come do it with me? There's so many ministries out there that want to be all things to all people. Ministries and startups have the same problem, and that is the worst thing that can happen to them is have too much money because you feel like you need to go spend it. In fact, you're being told to go spend it. And so you end up doing dumb things when in fact, like, there's over 100 companies that you can point to that started during depression or during recessions that are great companies. They started and they were great because they were able to cut back and only have the necessity.
Yeah.
They cut off the arm to save the body, right? And I think that there's a humility, Wayne, that you possess regarding that. Like, you have this great, I mean, I know you well enough to know and have spent enough time one-on-one and together to know that you have this, like, uncanny ability to be very confident in what you want to go do and also humble enough to go, I don't know exactly how to go do it. That's rare. Like, most people are either like overly confident and don't, I'm not going to ask for any help. I'm just going to go march to the beat of my own drum, A, or B, boy, shucks, I don't know. I don't have any confidence. I'm just going to sit here and pray about it. Not that prayers and wrongs anything wrong, but you just get navel gazing. Mm-hmm. You have both of those. Like, I've seen the confident Wayne and I've seen the humble Wayne, and I've seen them within 5 minutes of each other. And I think you do a really good job of going between those. I know this isn't a Wayne praising session, but just to say, like, we're sitting in a multi-million dollar building with volunteers all running it and homeless folks or unhoused people that you're caring for, taking care of downstairs on a cold day. Like, that comes because you have the confidence to go, hey, I think I can go do this. I think God's calling me to go do this, so I'm going to go take the next step. And also the humility to go, yeah, but I don't know how to deal with veterans as well as others might. And maybe I'm not the best with regards to mental health, so therefore I need to, right? Whatever you're not great at, you're like, come on. I've got a facility for you. Come be a partner. You come in. We'll take care of all the logistics. You go do what you do really well. That comes from your software background, right? You think for, like, a system architecture, and you go, this is the framework that we do really well, and I'm going to start to plug in via APIs, all these other things. And who benefits from that? The unhoused friends of Wayne Walker and of our calling to go, oh, it's super easy to come in and get my clothes washed and to have someone pray for me and do some counseling. And I'm a veteran, so I have veteran benefits, and it all is seamless because why? You sat back and thought, if I were to start from scratch, how would this all work? It's beautiful.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. But the only reason why any of this happened is not because of some brainchild, right? Some kind of original idea in my head. You know, if you see anything good, it's the Holy Spirit. But God has also surrounded us with the most amazing people. We have the most amazing staff. We have the most amazing advisors and board members. I love the way that God uses people like you and your business experience to sprinkle some of that on ministries and to serve in ways like you've coached me. The business world has a lot to offer organizations like ours.
Yeah.
And it's not just to write a check. Although, it'd be great, man. You got a check. We'd love to have it, right? But there's so much that we can learn from business executives and people that have run organizations before. Yeah. You know, on our board of directors, you know, I've got super successful finance guy, a real estate guy. I have, you know, a surgeon guy. I also have two moms that are caring for their kids really well and are managing their family and all their needs, right? One of them also works in the medical field or education field, right? And having those individuals that bring that experience into a place like this is so vital. Yeah. How do organizations like ours connect with the business community? Because, I mean, I get told all the time, you know, like, ask somebody else to be on your board. But I'm not going to ask a guy who has no interest in serving the homeless or a woman that just because of her business experience, you know, ask her to come be a part of this if she's not expressed any desire to serve the poor. So how do we connect with people in business that can bring those skill sets to a place like this?
You know, I'd say very pragmatically, pray about it and see who God puts on your heart. And then go ask them. The worst they can say is no, which doesn't leave you in a worse position. This is where startups and ministries are so similar. Like, I have an idea, let me go ask an investor. I have an idea, let me go ask a client. I have an idea, let me go ask an employee to start with me and see what happens. Mm-hmm. And if you can't raise money and you can't find a client and no one wants to work for you, you probably have a really bad idea. You know, unfortunately in ministry, people are like, well, it's a bad idea, but I want to feel good about myself and I need a tax write-off, so here you go. And then you have these kind of zombie businesses and ministries running around. I would say pray about it and go ask them. When I was in college, I did an internship at Prison Fellowship, and I was the Chuck Colson's chief of staff's intern. So I got to spend time with Chuck Colson, the great Chuck Colson, right? And he was incredible. I got to spend a lot of time with him. At the time, the president was a guy named Tom Pratt, who was the former CEO of Herman Miller, the furniture company. He had retired and became the president of Prison Fellowship. And one day, Tom called me into his office, and he said, hey, what are you going to go do with yourself? I was a junior in college, I think, maybe a sophomore. And I said, I want to go run a ministry. And he kind of chuckled to himself. He's in his 60s. He's a Fortune 500 CEO. And he says, can I give you a piece of advice? And I said, sure, of course you can. He said, go out into the real world, run businesses for a couple of decades, and then come back. He said, there are more well-meaning Christians who have no experience running a business who just screw up ministries. Mm. And I honestly was kind of offended because I was like, well, God's called me to run this ministry or whatever. I had no idea what I was going to go do. I didn't go run a ministry. I've been in business. I'm not running a ministry now, but I do get to work with people who are running ministries. And he's so right. He's so right, because I've raised money and I've sold businesses and I've hired and fired people and I've had to have hard conversations and I've had to do all the things. I've got skins on the wall that not only gives me credibility, but also brings wisdom to the table. And go, yeah, you need to fire that person. Well, it's the niece of the donor. It doesn't matter. Like, she's not aligned with your mission values. Well, he's going to pull his money. Great. Then if he's going to pull his money because you won't hire his niece, is that really who you want, whose money you need? And do you think that you really need that? Like, God can't do it without his money or her money? And so I think ask, do podcasts, write. God is constantly working. There's a great book by Mark Batterson called Whisper. And my wife and I, and it talks about how the Holy Spirit works through whispering, right? And there's not a month that goes by where Angela and I won't call each other or talk to each other and be like, hey, I think I heard a whisper. And what that means is two or three or four different people who are unrelated all said the exact same thing to us that came out of left field. We'll be like, what do you mean? What does that mean? Well, I don't know what that means, but I think it's a whisper. And more often than not, it is. What does that mean? That's the Holy Spirit going, hey, I've got something for you over here that might be next month or next year or a decade from now, that I'm just kind of planting the seed in your heart because I want you to be turning towards this. Hmm. There was a time in my career, I didn't have time. There was no whispers. you had to yell. And even then, I didn't really care what you had to say. I was too important. I was too busy. My wife would probably say the same thing in her own life. Now we're quiet enough to go, ooh. And it could be the person at the drive-thru. Like, it doesn't have to be like it. And you go, oh, there's a whisper there. And Mark Batterson has a beautiful church ministry up in Washington, D.C. that I think, if I remember correctly, deals ministers a lot to an unhoused community up there in downtown Washington, D.C. They've got this beautiful building, coffee shop, et cetera. So I would say, like, reach out. Shoot your shot, man. Like, all they can say is no, and you're no worse off.
Yeah. Okay, so you wrote the book, Good Entrepreneur. Yep. It's an amazing book. Highly recommend it. You've turned it into a podcast where you can basically listen to every chapter for free, which is awesome.
If you like my pleasing voice,
love your voice, man. It puts me to sleep. No, I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. There's a lot of homework in the book, but it's really, really good. But beyond that book...
You don't have to do the homework, by the way. I'm not going to grade it.
You're not going to grade it? Good. Beyond the book, for people listening to this that maybe you're serving in ministries, do you have a couple of other recommended books where they could start to look for some coaching advice and leadership principles?
Yeah, a couple different ones. Number, first of all, I'd start with Boundaries. I mean, if you haven't read Boundaries, or even if you have read it again. Like, that's the beginning and end, in my opinion, with regards to living in your own, being properly prepared to go execute what God's asking you to execute. There's a great book by Patrick Lencioni called The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. And it just hits on all five levels. I'm sure you've read it. I have on my website, nickkennedycoaching.com, a list of a ton of books, not a ton of business books. I think most business books are pretty pathetic. I think most business books should be a blog post. But great books around the human condition. That you can go look, and there's hundreds of them out there that are good. Most importantly, here's the rule about reading. We're very bad memorizers, so don't worry about remembering what's in the book. Remember who you were before you started and after. A book is a filter through which you can see the world through someone else's eyes. You should be able to walk away and go, I see how that person saw something differently. Read books for people you disagree with just to understand empathetically how someone else thinks that way. And the number two rule of book, if you don't like it, put it down. I pick up, for every 10 books I pick up, I put 8 of them down. I love the library, and I go and get copious amounts of books, and I'll get through the first chapter and be like, this is bad writer, bad idea, I'm out. Kindle, you can download the first chapter for free, right?
Like, yeah.
So I would just say be a copious, leaders are readers. Read and read and read. It's the greatest ROI. You can take a weekend. Go read my book. You can read it in a weekend. And it's a sum total of what I know about entrepreneurship in 40 years of my life. And you get it to do it in 48 hours.
Wow. Well, I'm really appreciate you coming in here today. Mm-hmm. Thanks for your time. Thanks for your investment in me personally. And thanks for your investment in Kingdom Work.
It's an honor and a privilege. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to do what God's called me to do.
All right, man.